Let me read some. Oh, no, 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 no. I never let anybody read my stories. Why not? Well, what if they didn't like them? What if they told me I was no good? I don't know if I could take that kind of a rejection.
That's obviously Back to the Future with George McFly. And, you know, most of us have had that experience of just we produce something, whether we write a paper for school or we learn a dance routine, and you're just afraid to go out in public because you're afraid of not people who are going to cheer you on, unless you think they're doing it and they're phony, but you're afraid of rejection. You're afraid of scowls. You're afraid of people rolling their eyes or telling you a thing or two. And you don't ever want to be afraid of reality. You don't want to be afraid of people. You don't want to set yourself against people. You know that well-worn statement that you want to be able to dance as if nobody's watching? Well, you want to be able to go through your life as if you don't have a whole bunch of people wearing goggles staring at you, glaring at you. You want to get to the point where you've got psychological independence, where their evaluation of you is important only if it's reality-based. Meaning if someone says something that's true, you know, you use a lot of slang, and I find that off-putting, and you don't like that you use a lot of slang, you drop a lot of F-bombs or whatever, then you can clean that up, and that they've actually given you a gift. If they say something that's untrue of you, then you can either correct them or just ignore it. You want to have an approach towards people where you're not afraid of them. I'm Dr. Ellen Kenner. You're tuned into The Rational Basis of Happiness. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I can take your calls and questions, and you can even leave a question for me on my after-hours line. Toll free, 1-877-DR-KENNER. You can jot it down. Toll free, 1-877-DR-KENNER. Dr. Kenner, D-R-K-E-N-N-E-R. How many people do you tell I love you? Some people vomit that word. They say it to everyone. I love you, dear. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. And it becomes meaningless. Now, other people will never say it, and yet you can feel their love. And sometimes people, it's just a very touchy word. Sometimes people say it with a sing-song type approach. I love you. Or they say it beggingly. I love you, meaning, do you love me? So one listener asks, what is the rationale behind the words I love you and love you? Her name's Tasha. And I want to talk about that for a moment. I love you. You. Three simple words. I love you. That presupposes something. If you hated yourself, how could you, a hateful person or a person that you think is hateful, love anybody else? So to say I love you, Ayn Rand, my favorite author, Ayn Rand, she's the author of The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, both at my website, writes, to say I love you, one must first know how to say the I. You must have self-esteem. She doesn't say you must have self-esteem. I added that. And she said, man or woman, obviously, who does not value himself cannot value anything or anyone. And that's from her book, The Virtue of Selfishness. And that's a real eye-opener. Can you imagine the virtue of selfishness, self-valuing? You never step on anyone else because you wouldn't respect yourself if you did that, and you don't allow other people to step on you too. So in love, thinking about love, my co-author, Dr. Ed Locke, talks about two people in a marriage or in a partnership as egoism à deux, the French words, egoism for two. That means there are two solid individuals. No one is becoming a doormat for the others. You know, in the 1950s, the woman was usually the doormat for the husband, or that's the stereotype. And then in the 1980s, the women's lib movement, or 1970s, we're trying to reverse the tables and make men the doormats for women, and both are wrong, obviously. So you want to be able to think of the people in your life who you love. Make sure you're someone you love first, And when you feel like you can share with them, when you genuinely feel that emotion of loving them for their good traits, tell them you love them. Because you want, that's the exchange that you're giving. You don't want to say, I love you because you're pitiful, or I love you because I love you because it seems like you need me to love you. Again, quoting Ayn Rand, she said, a selfless love would mean that you derive no personal pleasure or happiness from the company and existence of the person you love, and that you're motivated only by self-sacrificial pity for that person's need of you. So you think of many marriages where people cling to each other after decades, or one really can't stand the other person and the other, but they stay in the marriage for the kids' sake or for whatever the heck reason they tell themselves. But I would never want to be loved that way. I would never want a selfless love. It is not love. So you want to take a closer look at your relationships and make sure that you're not selling yourself short, and also that you have the courage to express your love openly to the people who matter in your life. I'm Dr. Ellen Kenny. You're listening to The Rational Basis of Happiness. And here is an email from John. This is a 6-year-old boy telling fibs. And think of your own childhood when you told maybe a fib or two to your parents. Dear Dr. Kenner, my 6-year-old boy has been telling fibs for about 6 months now. His imagination produces unbelievable fabrications. This behavior has extended towards his mom. We're separated for 3 years, me and his grandparents. Is this some sort of age normal? I mean, I guess he's saying, is it normal for this age? What can two concerned parents do to work through this phase? This is wonderful when you say two concerned parents, because it sounds like you're not at war with your wife, and you have a 6-year-old kid who's been through the process of divorce, and he's lying. There's no way about it, around it. You're saying he's producing unbelievable fabrications, and I wish you had given me an example of one or two of these. But let's say that he's telling you that he got straight A's in school when he didn't. You know, he's trying to make him, in that case, he might be trying to make himself look better, or he wants your approval. Let's say that he's telling his friends that his parents are very wealthy and own 20 cars, and the cars are all, I don't know, what would a kid, 6-year-old kid say? They all can fly too. And, you know, maybe he's just feeling inadequate about friends who may have more wealth. You need to use what's called the natural consequences with him, because you don't want to label him as a lying kid and then that becomes the way you look at him. You look through those lens. You want to find ways to help him break out of the mold of a lying kid. So first, you want to, anytime he tells the truth, with a light touch, you want to say, you know, that was nice. You said this and it was exactly what you said. He's got to see why lying is wrong firsthand. I would get the book, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. I think chapter 6 deals with this issue of breaking kids out of a bad role. And the chapter, instead of punishment, will help you see how you don't become a wimp with this, but you don't do what most parents do when they steal from your purse. You're never going to. The screaming and yelling, and then the kid wants to steal even more, and you worsen the problem. So you want to help him distinguish between the truth and falsehood and creativity. If they're imaginative stories he's telling, try to help him develop a creative side, but to never lie to you, to never fake reality. And I could go on about this, and maybe if you email me again, I could talk more on this subject. I'm Dr. Ellen Kenner on The Rational Basis of Happiness.
When I entered my marriage, I left my true self at the door. Now I don't even know who I am anymore.
My girlfriend doesn't want to make anyone mad. I never know how she truly feels, and I'm clueless when it comes to pleasing her sexually. She won't express what she likes.
How many lose themselves in a romantic relationship, feeling unimportant, taken for granted? Or perhaps they lie or cheat and think their partner should forgive and forget. I am Dr. Ellen Kenner, clinical psychologist and co-author with Dr. Edwin Locke of the romance guidebook, The Selfish Path to Romance. Provocative title? I know. By selfish, we mean the the self-valuing, self-nurturing way to romance. You never want to lose yourself in a relationship. You want to create a win-win partnership to value your own and each other's goals and dreams. Discovering how to be true to yourself in a romantic partnership is learnable and key to romantic happiness. Check out our book with its daring title, The Selfish Path to Romance, at Amazon or selfishromance.com.